listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
To the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very special guest. We're going to welcome back Darnell Cole of Darnell Cole and the Vibe. How are you, Darnell?
Doing well. How are we doing, Nikki?
Good. I feel like we've been talking like crazy for the last couple of days. So it's
a little. That's how it's supposed to be, man. You know, we got a lot of big things coming, you know.
That's right. We've got a special announcement that we will announce at the end of the show. But for now, you've done some pretty amazing things. You've been touring England. You played the Isle of Wight Festival. You've been playing, making records, doing all kinds of live shows. Tell me, before we get into all that, what was the moment of Zen that made you want to become an artist?
The moment of Zen, you know, it's interesting. There's been a couple. My parents did music. You know, my dad played guitar, mom played drums and stuff. So music was always kind of around for a while. But for me, the true moment is I used to busk, right? And I would have been 15, 16 at the time. And I remember I was busking and I was playing, oh my gosh, it's a Beatles tune. She was just 17. Oh my goodness gracious. And I saw her standing there. There we go. So I'm playing that song and this lady comes up. And she's crying, and I'm like, oh God, you know, white lady crying. I was a little nervous, but no, she was cool. She's like, you know, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. And I was like, oh, you're welcome. You know, I was just busking. She goes, no. She goes, my husband passed away, and that was our song, and I needed to know that he was all right. So thank you for being a conduit.
Wow. That gave me chills.
Yeah. And she's like, you have a gift. Don't stop. And I kind of realized in that moment that music heals the wounds that medicine can't. And I really wanted to always, you know, I always wanted to have that be a part of my life and have it be something that's important to me. So I've just kind of been doing it ever since.
That's amazing. What an amazing story and an amazing moment. First of all, I always believe that music channels the higher power, whatever that energy is, that universe thing, with reality, and you had that moment right there. Like, did you feel anything like when you were playing it? Do you remember the moment, or was it just like, because busking is hard? It's like,
yeah,
you're just playing for, like, you know, people passing by. You hope people will stop. It's a hard gig. But well, did you feel anything in that moment? Did you remember, like, okay, this feels different?
A little bit of yes, a little bit of no. It was hot. It was in the summer. And where I busked was in front of this, Ralph's, and I sat on this little stoop that they had, like this little column. There's no shade covering. It was brutal. My guitar got beat up, but I still have it. It's over there in the back hanging. But no, I remember feeling how powerful music was in that moment. I didn't necessarily at the time know what was going on. I didn't realize how impactful that moment was going to be for me. But I do remember, like, singing the song and, like, you know, you look out at the people coming by and, you know, I saw her there vibing, and it was just one of those, like, oh, okay. Like, I knew something was happening. Wasn't sure what, you know, I could tell that people were being moved by it in some way. I just didn't know which way or to what extent. So it was definitely very affirming when I saw that happen when she came
up. I've had moments like that, and I know, I'm sure you can relate to this. To us, it's just a normal thing to play a song. And then when it transfers into this unbelievably, like, super normal thing, it becomes supernatural, you know, and it reminds us, wow, this is what we do. It's like, so I love that affirmation you got. But I mean, I know there was a part of you that was like, yeah, I'm just playing this song that I've been playing in my room or practicing or playing at other shows or playing at other moments where I'm busking, where it's normal. And it's like, then it becomes extraordinary in that moment for you. It's like you realize, oh yeah, this is not normal. This is not something that everybody can just do. And that's what makes it so extraordinary. Did you have that moment, or was it like, okay, this is just like, I have to like make sure I remember this going into any other future moment like that?
It was definitely something that I wanted to make sure that I didn't take for granted, right? You get a couple moments in your life where something happens and you go, I need to savor this. Something real has happened. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Pulp Fiction, right? And the part where the guy, Lamar Book, comes out and he shoots at him, and Jules and Vince look around and they're like, you know, what the heck? And then he's like, damn it, a miracle happened. You need to acknowledge it, damn it. And he's like, okay, a miracle happened. Can we go? Right. and I find myself in line with Jules' thinking, which is when those miracles, when those moments of beauty happen, you gotta just kind of sit there and soak it in, you know, let it marinate.
Well, one thing that's really extraordinary about you, I've been watching some of your videos and checking out some of your music. We met at NAMM, I think it was last year, or was it the year before?
Yeah, would have been the year before, I believe.
So, you know, I knew you were a great artist as soon as I kind of met you, because you can just kind of like feel people's presence, especially like when artists put time into themselves and music, you can kind of see it in their vibe. And I just knew you could play. But then when I checked out your music, I'm like, this guy can really dig in and play some guitar. Tell me, like, what was the moment for you that made you realize, I want to be a little bit of a guitar slinger, because you can play and you can dig in. And I'm sure Hendrix was a big influence. But tell me what that decision or choice or that moment you were like, I'm going to work at this and just become that.
You know, I stayed at a Holiday Inn motel and, tough one. I'd say what made me know I wanted to be a guitar slinger. I mean, my dad played guitar. And so like, I kind of always was like, oh, that's cool. Like I played bass. You know what? I'll say this. There was a couple, it was kind of a congealed bit of moments. One of the moments was that I knew that I wanted to sing. And at the time, I was very naive. I was a young musician, and I didn't know enough about music to know that bass players can sing too, because I started off playing bass. And so I didn't know like Phil Lynott or Mark Hoppus or, you know, or Paul McCartney. I mean, I knew the name. I'd see them in bands, but I didn't know that they were singing and playing bass. I always thought the guitar player, front person, played bass. So I was like, I want to sing. I got to play guitar. So that was one of the things. But the one that made me knew I wanted to like shred and get down was it was a video. I used to work at Hollywood Video back in the day. For those who were too young to know, okay, Hollywood Video was a place that you'd go and you'd rent your movie. So it was like Netflix, but in person.
Yeah.
Right?
Old enough, don't worry.
Man, you know, some of the listeners, man, you never know, you know. And there was a DVD I took home. There was two. There was Lightning in a Bottle, which was great. And there was Stevie Ray Vaughan, Double Trouble, live in Montreal, I believe.
No. It's live at the El Macumbo.
Live at the El Macumbo. Thank you.
Toronto.
I was like, it's in Canada and there's an M. So I was Montreal, but El Macumbo. Yes. And he went into Pride and Joy. And I went, that's it. That's what I want to do.
That's so funny that you say that, because Hendrix to me was a mythical figure. Like, I listened to him in high school and I was like, man, Hendrix is a mythical figure. And when I saw Stevie Ray Vaughan live at the El Macumbo, I was like, wait, somebody else can do this too? And it made me just also have way more respect for Stevie Ray Vaughan, because he was actually playing it even tighter and with more precision, even though it's like he wasn't the innovator, but he was executing in a way that like made, I don't know if it was the fidelity of it or just the time of it, like landing like at the right time for me to see it, to think, wow, this is precision guitar playing at its finest. And he still is my favorite guitarist. Like, he will always
be up there. He's up there. He's got to be, you know, in a way. I don't know if I had a top five.
That's a good question. I like this. Top five. Let's do it.
Top five. Okay. So I'd say Stevie, Jimmy, for sure. Got to have both. Two sides of the same coin. Derek Trux. Derek Trux is on there.
Great choice.
Freddie King.
Yeah.
Of the Kings, it's got to be Freddie King. And Iommi.
Iommi. Who's Iommi?
Yeah. Tony Iommi, Black Sabbath.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Tony Iommi, Black Sabbath.
What about B.B. King, Albert King?
No.
Oh, wow.
And here's why. Controversial. I know. B.B. King, great musician. His songwriting for the blues and what he did for the blues. There's no, you don't get Freddie without B.B., at least not per se.
Yeah.
But then you go back with that, with Muddy Waters, Lightning Wolf, all that other stuff. So I don't know, but BB's songwriting was great, but I feel like his playing was very, very good. But it was the foundation, right? And there's something to be said for that. Don't get me wrong, but it was foundational. Albert King, I feel, was the opposite. I feel Albert King was the first musician of the group, right? I feel like his musicality was great. His songs, whatever, it's a blues song. There's a three bar, there's a verse, there's a chorus, it's about this. Okay, cool. But you don't listen to him for the songs, you listen for his playing.
Right.
I feel like BB, you listen for the story. Albert, you listen for the playing. But Freddie to me combines the both. And I feel like he takes from both, and you want to hear the story, but you want to hear the playing, and it's this nice little in between land that I like to live in. And so for me, that's why it's Freddie King.
Well, it's also like Going Down is like one of the greatest songs. It's just the best. It's the best. Yeah. It's funny, we were talking about Larry McRae for episode 7. We actually did Going Down, and I was like,
nice.
You know what's funny is like, I've known that song. I saw the Stones cover it with Gary Clark Jr. and Mayer. But for some reason, there was one day where I heard the song in a restaurant. And it was like in the background. And it was just pulling me. I mean, it was just like, God, this
group. It's got that magic.
And it was just like, what? This is like hearing it for the first time all over again. And it's like, his version's the best. His vocal's the best. His guitar solo is vicious, and it's just perfect. And then it's just like, it fades as it's like still going. And it's just like, yo, this guy's like on another planet.
Well, it doesn't get better than a 355 plugged straight into a super reverb, 410s, dimed. Right. And you just whack it, man. Like that's the tone. That's the secret. That's it right there.
I agree. For me, I'd say top five. I mean, I'm going to have to, it's going to be a little cliche, but I would say, oh, wait a minute. Okay, hold on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have some ties for each place. So Stevie and Jimmy are at my number one.
You can't tie them, man. You can have a five with no order, but you can't tie them. You got to only have five, man.
Okay. I'm going to say, this is my personal list. I'm going to say Stevie and Jimmy. That's
okay.
Two. I'm going to say BB because he was my introduction to the blues. Like he was the first person that kind of like made me think blues music was otherworldly. And you know what? You're going to appreciate this. So this is a cool story. So I saw BB King at the House of Blues.
Right.
2003. And I waited for hours to try and meet him. And I just was like, I kept asking the security guard. I'm like, hey, man, is he going to come out? He's like, well, he may not. I don't know if he's coming out this entrance. He may go out the other side. And he's like, just wait. And I was like, man, this is crazy. I waited like 2.5 hours. And
oh, my gosh.
The fog rolled into Sunset Boulevard. And it was just like this crazy thing. And then literally he walked out in a giant, like, it was like a big coat with like fur lapels. And I said, BB, I waited a long time to meet you. And I just want to say, I love the blues. And I just wanted to meet you and say, thank you so much. And he reached into his pocket and he said, well, son, if you love the blues, you're a bluesman. And he gave me this guitar pick.
Yo, that's nice.
He also gave me a pin with his like his name on it. It was like a chain, and then he gave me like a lapel pin. But like I had the guitar pick in my wallet for a long time, and I was like, I need to hang this up on a wall because I'm gonna ruin it or lose it or whatever. But he to me was like one of the most pivotal bluesmen because he said a lot with not many notes. And it's like I can hear him in any recording. I have a great recording I have to send you of BB and Jimmy jamming. And Dude, it's so great. And it's like
BB and Jimmy, really? Oh wow.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not a record, it's just a jam. They happen to record. I can find it on YouTube too, but I have it. But you just hear both those players when they play who's who. And I think that's a real big signature when you like when you can hear somebody in a jam and you just know who they are.
You're like, oh, that's who that is.
So that's three. I'm gonna put Eric Clapton in there because he's probably one of my biggest introductions to all of this, like songwriting, rock and roll, playing lead, all of that. And he was also one of, you know, Jimmy's favorite guitarists as well.
Can't go wrong with Clapton.
One of the reasons that he went to England. And I'm going to say, oh man, I really want to put Freddie and Albert as number five. If I have to choose between one of the two, I probably will go with Freddie because Freddie I respond more to because there's just nobody like Freddie King, like you said. But without Albert King, you don't have Stevie Ray Vaughan. So it's like, it's hard. It's hard. He's my
favorite. You're right. He heard Jimmy too, you know, so you can get him. Yeah. He's on there.
So how did you get introduced to any of those guitar players? Was it your dad?
My dad definitely showed me a lot of them. My dad showed me B.B. King for sure, ironically. Stevie Ray Vaughan I kind of found, like I said, working at the guitar place. And that kind of sparked a lot of it because my dad, my parents were divorced at the time that I started getting into music really. Cause he always tried to get me into it. And I was always like, that's cool. That's your thing. Whatever. And then I would go and I kind of learned bass from him. And then I learned, like, I was like, learned 12 bar blues. And I was like, okay. And there was people and I'm sure he showed me all of them and none of them stuck. I was like, I don't know who these people are. It's dad's music and I'm just playing bass to it, you know? I knew it was supposed to be a certain way, but yeah, he definitely showed me Black Sabbath and he showed me War Pigs. And that moment I was like, I like this. And as I listened to more of them later on in life, after one of my first bands, cause the bassist was really into them. That kind of solidified Tony Iommi's spot because I was like, dang, that's the kind of guitar that I like. I like the way he plays guitar.
A little bit heavier. It's a little bit more grit. You know?
A little bit more grit, a little heavier, but it's melodic, but it's expressive, you know? And he actually has a lot in common with Freddie King, I think, to my ear. I can obviously tell who's who, but they approach music very similarly where I think Tony Iommi is a little, obviously he's darker, but he's a little bit, there's a heavier, like character behind it. Whereas with Freddie, it's the same approach, but it's a little bit more bubbly. And I like that. And I like that. So to me, they're the two sides of the same coin there. So you have Jimmy and Stevie, which Jimmy for me is interesting because a lot of people hear my music and stuff and they'll go, oh, you must be a huge Hendrix fan. He's on the list. Don't get me wrong. I don't have an order for my five. They're just, they all kind of exist there because they all do the same thing differently. Right. But if I had an order, he would not be number one, I don't think. Because I don't want to say I found him after I started playing because that's not true. But I got into him after I started playing. Like I'd listen to him and I was like, okay, that's Hendrix. I like Hendrix. All right, cool. And then I listen to Stevie Ray and then I listen to this and then another Hendrix tune would come. I'm like, ooh, I like that. And then, you know, you learn a couple Hendrix songs here and they're like, oh, and Hey Joe and Wild Thing. And, you know, and then eventually Voodoo Child was the game changer. Although that being said, Stevie Ray Vaughan's is the version that I cite more often than not, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
But Little Wing as well was one, and the tone and just, there was like a documentary about Hendrix that came out. And the more I got into him, the more I understood what was going on there musically and the more my appreciation grew. I guess to put it more simply is like I had an affinity for him and I knew I wanted him on my list and I didn't know why. And then as I got into him more, as I progressed as a musician myself, it came to light like, oh, that's why he's there.
Well, I feel like Jimi Hendrix, and this is actually a cool conversation. I feel like Jimi Hendrix is always the terminal I keep coming back to. Like, I was introduced to him and I was like, man, this is amazing. Unbelievable. And it was, I think it was Fire that it was on a Chevy Camaro commercial that made me go, what is this? Who is this? This is unbelievable. And then as I went down the rabbit hole of all of his music, I was like, this guy was insane. And then it was Steve Ray Vaughan. And then it was like finding all these, you know, Clapton, the BB Kings, all these, you know, and then T-Bone Walker, all these old school guys. Then you go back and it's like Robert Johnson. It's like all these guys were innovators. But I end up keep coming back to Henrik's, like, this guy was innovating, taking blues to the next level. Like, I think it's crazy when people don't call him a blues artist, because he is a blues artist to me, because, like, that's what he loved.
Captain Blues, for sure. Yeah. Red House.
Yeah, Red House is, like, probably one of the best blues ever.
Hear My Train Rolling It. Like, he's a blues artist.
Yes. So it's crazy, because I always keep coming back to him. And Steve Ray Vaughan also is, like, I don't know, when you make a record, oh, this is, I love these, this is amazing to have this conversation. When you make a record, you're getting guitar tones and you're mixing.
Right.
Do you reference any artists or albums? I always feel like I go back to Steve Ray Vaughan, and it's like a different fidelity and it's a different sound. The drums have reverb and he's got like a different bite and even a lot of reverb for that time for that guitar sound. But I always go to him, Henrik's, like for a guitar tone and go like, is it somewhere in the middle? And then it's Clapton. It's like those three are the ones I model any guitar, any record solo around.
I think I reference them all for different things. So I think I reference Stevie and Jimmy more for feel, right? Like the, like just when you hear it, you want to feel a certain type of way. Cause I feel, I guess getting ahead of my thoughts. And as far as tone goes, I think I reference between all of them for different songs, but not intentionally, not like in an actual tone way. It's in a feeling way more than a tonal way. Cause like, I feel like tonally, I'd probably shoot somewhere in between Iommi and Freddie King tonally. But then when I play like softer stuff, I kind of want a lot of that Little Wing or what's it called? Texas Flood tone a little bit, even though I don't play with single coils that often, not anymore. I play P90s. So like kind of sort of, but anyway, but even like Derek Trucks, like Midnight in Harlem, like that's, you it's can't go wrong. One of the
best songs ever written. And did you know that it's not written by Derek Trucks or Susan Tedeschi?
Really?
It's written by their backup singer. Yes. Their backup singer is named, I think his name is Cody. I think his name is.
Oh, the one with the hair.
He's
the one. No. Kofi was the key player.
Kofi Burbridge was the key player. But there's another guy that he's like a fair skin.
Yeah, with the fro.
Yes.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I think his name is Cody. I'm pretty sure it is.
Probably Cody and Kofi. That would be a lovely sight. Cody!
I could be wrong, though, maybe because my memory is just going as I get older. But he's the one that wrote that song. And he has a version where he kills it on the vocals. And I'm like, man, he should sing this with them. Like, and so every now and then they throw him a verse or they throw him like a little part of the song. And that's them giving a nod to him because he actually wrote the song. That song is unbelievable to me.
That is, at that, well, actually, since we're talking about Derek Trucks, shout out to my boy Jerome Burnett. He's an amazing photographer. Don't know if you've ever met him. If you don't, check him out. He does concert photography, and he got this awesome shot.
That's awesome.
Of the man himself, Mr. Derek. And I did a gig for Mr. Jerome. He had a gala. And I played there, posted on my gram. It's out there. But anyway, so he was like, hey, I'll give you a print for, you know, playing this thing. I said, bet. And that was one of them.
That's awesome. Yeah. One of my bass players played in Tedeschi Trucks. He was in the band for like 6 years. So one of the shows, you'll definitely appreciate this. It was at the Greek Theater, Gary Clark Jr. opening for Tedeschi Trucks.
That's a show.
He gave us all backstage passes. I got to meet Derek. I got to exchange contact info with him. And it was pretty crazy. And he was in the band for like 5 or 6 years. And he left. He was like, yo, I'm on to different things. And he was just like, I want to be a jazz artist too. But little, here, let me see if this will show up. Hold on.
Yo.
not coming out. Hold on.
There. I can see it. I already know. I can tell. You and the man.
But you know what's cool? It's like, I was like, man, how could you ever get tired of playing with Derek Trucks? And he said, no, it's never that. He said, I always loved. He said, man, there was never a bad night of just hearing him play and just hearing him shred. And every night he did something unbelievable. He was just always tapped in, and every night he delivered something extraordinary. And I'm like, that's extraordinary for any musician just to be talked about like that, because that's never easy. And especially, he's like a great bass player, and he has a he was playing with, do you know Wayne Krantz by chance?
I've heard the name.
Wayne Krantz is like a badass jazz musician, played with Steely Dan. So he was
That might be.
Playing in a trio with Wayne Krantz and Keith Carlock. I don't know if you know Keith Carlock. Keith Carlock was also Steely Dan's drummer. He's also played with Mayer. He's played with the heaviest of the heavies, one of the best drummers. But so like he's played with all these like badass guitarists. So for him to say that, I was like, dude, that's kind of insane that every night he was able to tap into something that was just extraordinary. And so like I love that he's one of your guitar heroes, because I've never heard him play. He's like an old soul playing. Like every time he plays, I've never heard him play.
Well, he's been playing since he was 7.
That helps.
The reason he's on my list is because so each of them all do a thing, I think, in the realm of guitar that's just so different. Like, I think when I think of Jimmy, I think of expression. I think no one expresses like Jimmy. If there was a school of guitar arts, expression, Jimmy would teach it. You know, it's not the cleanest guitar playing. Him and Jimmy Page, ironically, very much of the same school. Both Jimmy's both very expressive players, but to me, Hendrix just resonates a little bit more in my book. And so with Stevie Ray Vaughan, I think it's precision. When you want to talk about just absolute nailing a part, nailing the timing, nailing the riff, just guitar wizardry, that's Stevie Ray Vaughan. When you want to talk about tone, I'm gonna give that to Iommi. I think Iommi's tone, wow, I think is just killer tone. No matter the song, it's heavy, but it's so good. I don't think I've ever heard a Sabbath record and was like, I don't like the guitar in it.
Right.
And then phrasing for me, I would say is Freddie King. Freddie King's phrasing is like I could listen to how he phrases all the time. It's perfect. And then Derek is the most important school, and that's playing to the song and serving the song. Reason I think a lot of people enjoy Derek Trucks, I know the reason I do anyway, is that I can listen to him for hours because what he plays, it doesn't overdo it. It doesn't underdo it. It's that's what the song needed. Yeah. And it sucks because it's one of those things that you don't really know until it's done. Right? It's like a good cooking recipe. You're like, should I put more salt? Should I put more pepper? You don't really know until after you've added it and tasted it and it's all cooked and done. And he just does that live. He does it in recordings. It's just, and that's the other thing too, is the balance of the live and that. And that's also the other reason why those guitarists are on my list, because they do it live. There's a lot of guitarists that do it, you know, recording, and then you see them live and you're like, okay, that was good. But you know, it was, all right. But they do it live too. And that
I would say Derek especially probably dials in his guitar tone live even better than on the records.
Yeah.
I think the records sound great, but when he plays live, there's something else that's in there that it's just like unbelievable. For me, the tone of Stevie Ray Vaughan's like one of my favorites. And any live show or record is just like, God, what is he playing through? And you could play through those same things. And I think it's just all on his fingers. It really is.
You can set things up the exact same way and it just won't be right.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, let's play something of yours. What do you want to play first?
Let's go with the first one that I sent you, I think. Let's go with the last one that I sent you. It's a big stage. It's Journey. It's the most live as far as sound goes, but it's a good way to break everything in, and you can kind of see the big picture stuff with it. And I love it. I was in Made of Stone Festival in England. This is a show that we did where sharing the bill with the likes of like Larkin Poe, Living Color, Jared James Nichols, a lot of big cats on this bill. So just very honored to be a part of it. And yeah.
And the song's called Journey, is that what we said?
Journey, yes.
Here's Journey by Darnell Cole and The Vibe.
Guys, like what you hear, we are selling merch over there, but the lovely missus over there is selling the merch.
Are we feeling good, Madstone? Are we feeling the vibes? That's why it's called Darnell Cole, The Vibe, you know. Because it's not audience and artists. It's all of us here together just vibing. Do you feel me? Now I want them to hear you all the way on all the other stages. Do you feel me? Let's go on a journey then.
What you can't see. let go of that which you know. Let the journey guide you home.
So good, so good. Are we back? Are we back? Can you hear me?
I was like, oh my God.
Dude, amazing. I want to talk pedals for a second. What are you using for your overdrive?
None. No, I'm half true. So I use amp overdrive. I let the amps do it. So I'm running two amps that specific show. I was actually using Orange and Black Star. Orange is the amps that I'm endorsed through. So I was running their Super Crush, their Crush Pro 100 there. And I run that dirt with no reverb. And then on the other side, I had a Black Star Artist 100 clean with the reverb. And then when I want to have the solos kick a little bit, now I have a different fuzz, but I have the Super Cranker from Walrus Audio, I believe it is. And then I'll tie that in with the I think it's what?
Did you have a Univibe?
Yeah. And a Univibe, yeah.
You said you paired it with what? What were you saying?
The Super Cranker, I believe, is the one. I think it's Walrus Audio, I think.
That's awesome. Dude, great tone. It's just awesome. You know what's cool is I just used Orange amps for the first time for Sight and Sound. And it's, you know, I kind of found it's like such great guitar tone. Not always the easiest to get a clean guitar tone.
It's difficult. Well, okay, so here's the secret. You use the solid state stuff. Their analog amps are great amps. I love all their amps. I'm not just saying that because they endorse me. I'm saying that because I genuinely love their amps. Analog amps, to get a good clean tone, you have to have insane amounts of headroom. I've found.
Yeah,
and especially for anything there. And I think that the thing that Orange does is they give you a good amount of headroom, but not an insane amount. So they get good cleans, but they're better. Their overdrive is just a better tone. But when you go into solid state, that's where it starts to shift, because solid state by nature is a more accurate tone. It's a cleaner tone. It's getting the dirt that's usually difficult. So when you run a solid state Orange, that's why I run a 2-amp rig now. So I have one that's all dirt with no reverb, which I love their dirt channel personally. And then the other one is their clean tone. And you run that with some reverb, just like a little bit of hall or plate, and it just sinks.
My favorite two, if I do 2 amps, I love the Twin and I love the AC30. But now I use the... I think I have a Fender Deluxe, like a reissue, like a 65 reissue. And it just, man, for all the trio stuff, it just breaks up so perfectly. It's like I can get the clean. I can get the dirt. I'm not throwing out my back, which is, as I get older, is a very important factor.
It's a thing. It's a thing. Like,
dude, so you're carrying 2 amps to every gig?
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Dude, you get a high five just for that.
Yeah, no, you know, it's one of those things where I was like, I didn't want to. I was like avidly like trying to avoid it. I was like, no. But then you play stereo once or dual mono, and it's just like, okay, this is. As we were talking about earlier today, you know, I'm very picky about my gigs now. I want to pick gigs that I like, gigs that are fun, gigs that, you know, where I get to do the sound justice. I get to do the song justice. And part of that is my tone. If I can't get my tone, if it doesn't sound like me, I'm not going to feel right. Derek Trucks can play anywhere, but he's going to sound like Derek. And he sounds best when he's got, you know, his Fender behind him amped up. That's what he does. Yep. And no one tells him, no, Derek, you can't play that here. Turn that down. He goes, I'm Derek Trucks. I'm going to do what I want. And he sounds amazing. I take the same approach. I take my two Oranges and I get them to where I'm like, this is where it needs to be. You're the sound guy. You figure the rest out.
Right.
That's your job. My job is to make the guitar sound good.
Well, I also love, like, a lot of the old school blues guys, they don't use pedals. It's all amp. You know what I mean? It's like they're using their volume knob as their overdrive. And it's like, I'm getting more and more close to that. And, you know, what's funny is like, I kind of gear out with pedals too, man. I always you can probably see some of the pedal boards.
Just a little bit.
But I just love pedals so much too, because you can get the sounds that you want, if you know, like with just very little effort. It's like, oh, okay, I don't have to think about this. This is it.
I feel you. I'm pretty much a straight in kind of guy for the most part too. Like, even like I said, I have pedals, but my whole pedal chain is I run the wah first. I run my tuner last because it's got the split on it, which is how I'm able to use the two amps. But it's wah into an MXR bass octavizer, ran into the fuzz pedal, which now I have one from Canned Monsters. It's there. It's a Polish company. They have a fuzz. It's a little finicky because they're a great company, but the one that I have from them, like, I got to kick it sometimes, otherwise it like shorts. So I got to get it soldered somewhere. But then that runs in to the Univibe, and then that runs in to the tuner. That's it. That's all I run. And most of them are off. Most of those pedals are off. It just runs straight into the amp. One clean, one dirt. That's my tone. I pull up the volume. That's my solo tone. It's just, if I need to have the extra stuff, I'm like, I need some wah. I need this, you know, if I need the spices for that specific dish.
You want colors when you're doing
it. Yes. Yes.
That's very cool. Let's play something else. That was a killer first performance. What are we playing next?
We'll do the one in the middle, which should be Sleeping Beauties, which is a song that I did with my old band, Porcelain Hill, but I wrote it. So I'm like, I'm continuing that song with me and the Vibe.
All right, here's Sleeping Beauties by Darnell Cole and the Vibe.
I'm learning things. Sleeping Beauties.
to heaven. Put your heart dances with the devil. Heels to heaven. Put your heart. Surprise, sleeping beauty. Open your eyes, cause you're in for a surprise.
Yeah.
Darnell, was that a 335 with a Bigsby pickup or a 355?
How'd that happen? Oh, there we go. It is it's a 335 kind of. It's a Vintage Guitars makes it. So it's a VSA 500. Technically, it's a VSA 5003. But specs wise, it's probably closest to a 345.
Okay. Because
it's got the chonky neck. But it's got like the regular block inlays. It doesn't have the stereo out like a 55 does. And that gig was before I was really using stereo. But it was fun. It was a good time. Killer.
Such a great solo. Such a great vibe. Band just killing, just grooving, man. You had a quartet for that. That's not
yes,
normal.
Yes. Yeah, no, those are the UK dudes, man. I have players that sometimes that'll accompany me when I'm in England who live there. Just super cool dudes, man. And that tour was the first tour of Darnell Cole and the Vibe in 2022. And we just hit the ground. We had one rehearsal, one little hour rehearsal, and we did a whole like 2 month tour off of that. So, yeah, it was great. It was great. These guys are great dudes.
That's Chuck Berry style. You're like, I'm just going to go there and have my rhythm section just show up.
Yep, that was it. Yeah, made it work, man.
So I wanted to ask you, so it was a Bigsby pickup, though.
Yeah, there's a Bigsby. There's a Bigsby on it, yeah.
That thing is rad. I have a 335. I'm tempted to put a Bigsby on it.
Do it.
Oh, my God, but it's just
do it.
But it's just 335 is already perfect just on its own. It's
every guitar needs a little wiggle wiggle. You know, if it doesn't have a wiggle stick, it ain't a guitar, bro. Got to have a wiggle stick.
That's funny. I love that. How many guitars do you have?
10.
Okay. All right.
I think.
What are they? Do you have like? Do you lean towards Strats? Do you lean toward like? Tell me.
So
what
I used to. I used to be like primarily a Strat style. Style guitars, and then I discovered big body guitars, and then those were the thing. And then I kind of fell back in love with SGs, especially because a lot of my favorite players, again Derek and Iommi, use them. So I was like, SGs are it. So now it's really mostly between SGs and like big body style guitars, like 335s and stuff. But I'll play anything, you know, if it sounds right, if it does the thing. I'd say more like right now I'm back on big body style guitars. Vintage Guitars makes one that's called the Pretender. It's like a 335 Trini Lopez style kind of a thing. It's got the diamond cuts, and mine is a one of one because it was their prototype and they wanted to get the coloring right, and they got the coloring wrong on it. And it's like this awesome blue with like sparkle in it. It's epic. And that's the only guitar I really haven't touched. I always do something to my guitars, whether it be paint them or do something like that or like, you know, whatever. That one I've left it pretty stock. The only thing I did is instead of the stop tail piece, I put it on a trapeze.
Okay. So, very cool.
But everything else I've left alone on it.
Well, let's announce this right now.
Let's do it.
we're about to play the Mint Saturday, September 27th. Darnell Cole is opening for NK Band. We have Electric Soul Parade also opening for Darnell Cole, and also Allie Handel opening up for Electric Soul Parade. Saturday, September 27th, we are all playing the Mint. I'm going to have all of the guitar slingers sit in with us as well. Come one, come all, save the date. We're announcing it now. Let's play this song. What are we going to play next?
Songbird. This is Songbird. This one was one that we did. This is performance is in England at a place that's no longer a place. That's a whole other story, dude. I didn't tour England this year, and every place that I love shut down or people died or it's crazy year. So this one I'm actually really happy to play and to get people out there, because this was at a place, the Dorothy Pax, and it was just a beautiful place for musicians. And the reason I played there was because of this amazing, amazing man, Martin Bedford, RIP to Martin. And this is just, it's in Sheffield, and it's just those, if anybody from England or anyone who knows the area is watching, like drop something in the chat, man, because this was a magical place. And they'd often would have bands come in and they'd record them and get the audio and the video, and, you know, just so much hospitality for new up and coming bands. And it's a shame that it's no longer around. So I'm really happy that I was able to get the performances there that I got, and great. And they'd feed you, you know, like they went above and beyond. And this is the one. So this is Songbird from Dorothy Pax.
Your Songbird by Darnell Cole and the Vibe.
No, Dorothy Pax, we came all the way from the US of A to play some music for y'all. Y'all feeling good? That is the type of enthusiasm that I like to see, man. Especially here, you guys got some really cool murals, man. You got some got swans and hummingbirds and crows, and I think I hear some of them birds, man. That one sounds like a songbird, which may or may not be the name of this next song.
Get those hands together. There you go.
That was awesome. We let it run. Well, we're going to have to sign off right now. But you know what? Saturday, September 27th, Darnell Cole and Cape Band, Electric Soul Parade, Alley Handle. Be there, be square. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Darnell, real quick, where can people find you online?
Darnell Cole Music or Darnell Cole Rocks. Look it up. You got it.
Check him out. Check out his music. He is a phenomenal talent. And I'm looking forward to having a show with these amazing artists. Come one, come all, Saturday, September 27th, Los Angeles. Here we go. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Darnell, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace and hair grease, people.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.